As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The prime thing is you have to win. You have to win. Otherwise, you can't be a success in professional football.
Every single day I come in here, I think about winning. You know, I don't do this year-round to come in and not make the playoffs. I'm sick of that shit, and I want to keep winning.
You're listening to The State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Tashawn Reed, and Ted Nguyen on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am Jimmy Durkin, joined by Tashawn Reed and Ted Nguyen. Vic Tafer, he might have got swallowed up by Vegas. I don't know. Hey, things happen in Vegas. We'll see if he pops up along the line somewhere here. But let's talk about these Raiders. Things are not going great. 1-3, three-game losing streak, obviously losing 24-17 to the Chargers last week. And we will probably spend plenty of the show talking about issues with Josh McDaniels in this team, but I will at least start off by giving him credit for one thing. Thank goodness he started Aiden O'Connell instead of Brian Hoyer. Not that O'Connell was great by any means, but I certainly was in a position where I'd much rather watch Aiden O'Connell last week than Brian Hoyer, and thankfully he agreed. But wasn't enough. He turned the ball over three times, and the Raiders found themselves in a big early hole that they could not get themselves out of.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great debut for Aiden O'Connell, but I mean, we figured he was going to have some growing pains. He had a great preseason, but again, that was against mostly backups and a lot of guys that aren't on active rosters right now. And you know, even though the Chargers defense hasn't been good so far this season, it's still an NFL caliber defense with starters out there, and so. It wasn't surprising. You know, some of the turnovers still, one of those fumbles, he really just dropped the ball without anybody touching him. And then the last interception, I know there's some other things going on, but you can't make that throw. But really the only way for young quarterbacks or any quarterback really to work through those kind of growing pains is to play. You know, you need reps and practice, or even preseason games, it just doesn't simulate, you know, that live action. And giving him an opportunity to go through that and work through those pains just had way more value in that than throwing out Brian Hoyer to do whatever he was going to do against the Chargers. Like, I don't think he would have gave them any better chance of winning. Like, the outcome is probably the same. And so at least in this scenario, you got something out of it in terms of your long-term future.
The fact that Aiden O'Connell got them back into the game later on and, you know, had a couple opportunities to win it was worth it to start him and get, like you said, get him through those growing pains. And it was very encouraging to see him move the offense and clutch opportunities. Obviously, the interception was something that you don't want to see, but it was kind of a one throw type of play call. It was a rub route where it's kind of predetermined to either throw to him or throw it away. Obviously, we'd rather have him throw it away, but the Chargers defense did a good job of recognizing what that play was going to be, even though they ran that play, the exact same play in the previous goal line session, and nothing worked. So it's kind of a curious play call, especially with the fact that they probably should have ran the ball. And if Josh Jacobs did get tackled, they could have ran the clock down to the 2-minute warning. So there was a questionable play call. Aiden O'Connell still shouldn't have thrown a ball, but there was it was a tough situation to put your rookie quarterback into.
Yeah, I think what was obvious for O'Connell is that early in the game, like the speed of going up against starters, like the speed of the game just seemed like it was like way too much for him. And he was struggling to kind of process. Khalil Mack was unblockable in this game, obviously six sacks. I think only the fifth guy in NFL history to have six sacks in a game. It did seem like just he was not adapting well to the speed of the game. He played those preseason games, but like we said, he's playing with and against backups. Was encouraging that in the second half, I mean, he started, things started to slow down for him. And I know a lot of fans are going to go out there and say like, start him again next week, start him against the Packers. But, you know, as Josh McDaniels already said, as long as Jimmy Garoppolo clears concussion protocol, he will be the guy out there. But it was nice to see that you did see it start to slow down a little bit and that he had some productive drives there in the second half.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for him to figure out was just pocket presence. You know, looking at his time to throw, it really is about the same as Jimmy Garoppolo in the first three games of the season. But he just didn't seem to be aware of like when time was running out. You know, when Khalil Mack or whoever else the Chargers had getting pressure was closing in. And, you know, even if nothing's downfield, those are situations where you either got to try to create with your legs or throw the ball away and move on to the next play. But, you know, just taking all those sacks and all the lost yardage, it really just makes it hard to get those drives going. And again, that's a field thing. That's something that, like, you know, you can go through it on film as much as you want to. But in practice, like, there are no live reps. In the preseason, there's nobody like Khalil Mack coming after you. And so, again, it just comes down to experience. And like you said, you know, even though Khalil, you know, did start off in the third quarter, like, getting after him a lot again, like, by the time that fourth quarter came, you know, he seemed to have a better feel for it. And also, I think the Raiders did a better job of designing up some more quick hitting pass plays that didn't require him to hold the ball as long. And, you know, some of those dump offs to Josh Jacobs, you know, he had a big receiving day. I think that helped him kind of get more comfortable through that aspect.
You know, just as far as the Khalil Mack sack situation and how he had six sacks and Josh McDaniels saying afterwards that they were, what was the number that McDaniel put on this? He said they had two bodies on it. Did he give a percentage?
I mean, he didn't give it. He wasn't that specific. He just said they did a lot of things. Yeah. He said we hit him in the ribs, we chipped him, we, you know, did a whole bunch of other stuff. But no exact number on it.
He has a great motor. We jammed him, we chipped him, hit him in the ribs. We did everything we could try to do to disrupt him with another player. And then we had a tackle, obviously, assigned to him as well. He had a great day. Yeah, there were a number of snaps where there were multiple people assigned to him and him only. And to be able to do some of the things that he did, I mean, give him credit. Ted, do you want to pull out some receipts here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the exact number on me, but just I looked at how many times he got chipped, and it was not very many. I mean, there were definitely times when they had an extra body on him. But I wouldn't say that they had a game plan geared towards Mac and stopping Mac. And I can understand if you didn't have a game plan coming into this game to stop Mac because he had zero sacks beforehand. But after he sacked your quarterback three times, like, you got to, you know, adjust your game plan and do something, you know, add some protection. You know, I was listening to New Heights, the Jason Kelce, Travis Kelce podcast, and he was talking about the situation. It was like, all right, you know, one sack, that's on me. Two sacks, I guess that's on me. But by the third, fourth sack, I'd be furious if I didn't get, like, you know, some extra help. So, you know, obviously Illuminor was struggling that game. And I just don't understand, you know, not having a chip every single time instead of just, you know, maybe once a drive or something like that. And you look back at a sack, especially when Khalil Mack actually had those sacks, he didn't have help. So it's an odd thing to I guess, listening to the quote, I guess technically he didn't lie because he didn't give a definitive number.
We had a number of times.
Yeah.
A number. There were a number of snaps. That number was eight, maybe.
Yeah. It could be eight. It could be four. It could be. But it definitely wasn't a big part of the game plan. That's for sure.
Here's the problem. Who do they have to chip?
Yeah, that's what, like, I was going to say. Like, I mean,
they don't have a chipper.
Like, Michael Mayer hasn't shown he's able to block so far. Austin Hooper, he once was a blocker, not really anymore. And so, I mean, I think they would rather get those guys out in routes, I guess, is the explanation. But they aren't throwing them the ball either. So I guess it's, you know, if you aren't going to throw it to the tight ends, you might as well have them chip, I guess. But yeah, I mean, you have to do something, though. You can't just let him continue to just dominate you up front. It wasn't just Illuminor. I mean, Colton Miller, like, on one of those fumbles, he just got pushed straight back into O'Connell. Like, he was manhandling him, too. So, you know, the Raiders' offensive line, like, while they're a lot of their, like, you know, raw metrics, like, their pretty good in terms of like the amount of pressures that they allow and things of that nature. Like when it comes to those one-on-one matchups against premier, you know, pass rushers, like they're not that good. And so they need some help in those situations. And you can't just go an entire game just asking to hold up against a guy like Khalil Mack when he's rolling like that.
Yeah, I mean, then there's really no excuse for them to not be prepared for Khalil Mack. We know that he hasn't been like the same guy that he maybe once was with the Raiders and early in his Bears days. But when he plays the Raiders, he is that same guy. He's played the Raiders three times since joining the Chargers. Since joining the Chargers, he has 14 sacks. 9 are against the Raiders. Like, over half of his career sacks with the Chargers are against the Raiders. He had a 3-sack game in week one against them last year, and then now the 6-sack game. I mean, so like he gets up for playing the Raiders, and that's kind of what you would expect.
Joey Bosa didn't even play in that game, so I mean, like, that's even more reason why you can just key in on Khalil Mack, because you don't got to worry about one of the Bosa brothers. But, you know, I mean, they have the rookie, Thule, that's been playing pretty well. But, yeah, I mean, you got to key in on Mack in that situation. But, you know, even within that, like, you know, there were other reasons why the offense had another day where it really wasn't that good. I mean, the run game, I think Jacobs had a good game overall because of what he did in the pass game, but his rushing statistics still weren't efficient. I mean, he averaged something around 3 yards a carry in the game, and they really couldn't get it going. And because they fell behind because of some of those turnovers, they couldn't really stick to the run. And so we've seen that issue continue, and it's made them a pass-first, one-dimensional offense. And, you know, I think that factored into, you know, essentially the game, the play that ended the game with the red zone interception was, you know, a lot of people are telling them, you know, run the ball there, but, like, they can't run the ball. like it hasn't worked, you know. So, I mean, I guess they could hand it off 3 times and then go nowhere, but, you know. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's not like their run game has been going, or this was the run game that they had last year. And so I think that's something that they really got to, like, until they figure that out, this offense just isn't going to be good. Like, they just don't have the facilities in terms of the types of quarterbacks that they have or the offensive line to just drop back and sling it every time. Like, it's just not how this team is built. And so if they can't figure out the run game, whether it's the red zone or driving the field, like, this offense is going to have issues.
Yeah, I mean, the best way that they're able to get Josh Jacobs the ball right now is just with the checkdowns and the passing game. The offensive line is just, right now, they're just having a real struggle getting any sort of push. And if it was any game where they could start getting the running game going, it would be against this Chargers defense, which is among one of the worst run defenses in the league. And they still couldn't really get any consistent push on them. I guess this was a little bit better than what has happened in the last few games. But I think it's pretty much a given that it's going to be a struggle getting, you know, creating any holes for Josh Jacobs throughout the season.
You know, if we do want to look to some positives from this game, they did shut the Chargers out in the second half. They got their first turnover. You know, they were able to do some things defensively. I mean, Justin Herbert is only 13 of 24, 167 yards through the air. They sacked him twice. Like I said, Trayvon Merrick got that first interception, the first turnover they've been looking for. I mean, so there were some positives to be taken out of that second half to see the defense be able to make some stops and give them a chance. I mean, what we saw at halftime, it look like this game was going to be a blowout, down 24-7. But they were able to make it a game, and we got to give the defense a little bit of credit for that.
Yeah, I thought, honestly, the last 2 weeks, like, against both the Steelers and the Chargers, like, the defense was okay. Like,
Steelers don't count, man. Steelers don't count.
I mean, for this Raiders defense, I mean, like, everything counts. Like, no matchup is easy for these guys, but, like, I mean, I don't think they've been the primary culprit in these losses. I honestly think it's the offense. Like, they put them in some really shitty situations. Like, even the 24 first half points the Chargers got, I mean, a lot of those was they had 2 fumbles in their own territory and gave them short fields to layups to go score, essentially. And you know, the Raiders, I mean, they've committed 10 turnovers this year. That's second in the league. They've given up the most points off of turnovers in the league. And so, like, their defense already is leaky, and you're just making it worse by giving away these opportunities to other teams, and half of those turnovers have come in their own territory. And so I think the defense has gotten put in some rough spots. Like, again, they have their issues, don't get me wrong. Like, the pass rush is still not there. The secondary, the tackling was really bad early on. The secondary has some lapses, like on the play that actually ended the game, Jordan Palmer running that double move on Ja'Quarian Bennett, got him to bite, and that was all she wrote for that one. But, you know, I think the defense has been okay the last 2 weeks, but, like, the offense, like, has just been awful so far this season. Like, you know, they're, you know, about, you know, mid-pack in terms of yardage and things of those natures, but they just can't put points on the board. They can't finish drives. They can't extend drives. And so it's really, you know, amplifying the pressure on a defense that already, you know, is pretty talent deficient right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think a takeaway from this game is that the defense was encouraging, especially in the second half, getting multiple stops. And I believe they're one of the top teams as far as forcing three and outs. I thought Trayvon Morig played his best game as a Raider. He had that interception. He also had a near interception in the first half in the red zone. He was pretty good in run support. Tyree Wilson looked a little bit better. I mean, there's still snaps where he's just getting off way too late and then getting zero push. But there were a few snaps where you saw that power that, you know, the Raiders drafted him for, and he got a really nice push on a few snaps, and that's a encouraging sign because he was, you know, doing nothing beforehand. I thought a few of the defensive tackles had good games. There are some encouraging signs for defense for sure, especially against a Chargers offense that has been playing like one of the top units in the league as far as scoring points. And we know that Justin Herbert's an elite quarterback. So that was good to see and encouraging to see. We'll see if they could bring it into this game against the Packers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so they're sitting at 1-3. We always kind of talked about the start of this season. The first four games here was going to be a tough stretch. Like, although really, like, for the tough stretch that we thought it was going to be, that kind of factored in thinking that playing at Denver in the opener was going to be a tough game, and having Pittsburgh was going to be a tough game. And obviously those are teams that, especially Pittsburgh offensively, is just pretty terrible, and they lost that game. So how do we feel about this team at 1-3? Do we feel any differently about them than we did going into the season? And look, somebody has joined us. Vic, we found him roaming around the streets of Vegas. I think he was up on a rooftop somewhere. We got him down. What's going on, Vic?
Wow, that's quite descriptive. On a rooftop somewhere in Vegas. I apologize. The schedule got me thrown off, so my apologies. But you asked if we thought the Raiders were what they thought we were. I mean, I thought they'd be 1-3, so I'm not sure I envisioned the offensive problems. I thought they'd be better offensively. I thought the defense might be even worse than it has been, so I guess maybe that's a wash. But I think clearly we thought Jimmy would be a little better than he has been. I think we probably thought Josh Jacobs would not be getting stuffed every occasion. So it's a big three games. I think these three games coming up are all winnable. I mean, our fans roll their eyes when I say that, but they are. So I think if they are going to have anything to be proud about this season, it's got to start this week.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised at all by like the record. It's about what I expected as well. But yeah, the nature of how they lost has been a little surprising. I mean, the offense is, again, it's been one of the worst in the league in terms of putting points on the board. And I thought they took a step back at quarterback. Like, I wasn't expecting, you know, the run game to fall apart and them to basically not use any receivers besides Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers. And so it's been a weird way to get there. But I mean, the result is about, you know, what we thought it would be for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like you guys said, the offense is the most, to me, it's the most disappointing. I mean, you know, you have all these star players, Josh Jacobs, Davante Adams, and they haven't scored. They're one of the few teams that haven't scored over 20 points in a game yet. And, you know, knowing what we know now, that the Broncos defense is you know, not even a debate, bottom of the league defense, and they couldn't score over 20 against them. That's pretty discouraging. I mean, I think they are figuring some things out, but I mean, I knew the running game would take a step back, especially with teams not respecting Garoppolo's deep ball, but them to get zero push on the offensive line is pretty surprising. The defense, you know, we were encouraged by what they were doing in the preseason, but we definitely have, I definitely had some questions about whether the defensive tackles were for real. And you know, so far we haven't seen that interior pressure that we've seen in the preseason so far. So, you know, like I said before, I think there were some encouraging signs in that Chargers game by the defense, but yeah, it's been pretty much the same type of defense that we've seen for years now.
All right, well, let's look ahead to Monday night, taking on the Green Bay Packers. Big question, obviously, going into the weekend still is what will be the status of Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, it was kind of a weird situation last week where he was in the concussion protocol but did practice the last 2 days of the week, which generally, if a guy is in the concussion protocol and is able to be out there and practice, we figure they're progressing to the point where they will be able to clear protocol and be able to play. So like, you would think that it's just kind of a natural, all right, yeah, he's going to clear protocol by Monday and be able to play. But last week, I think, was fairly surprising that he didn't. We found out on Saturday he wasn't going to travel to LA. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Vic, any sense? I know last week you were pretty confident as of Thursday morning that he was going to play. Does it still remain a mystery, or do you feel like it should be pretty certain that he's able to get it back out there on Monday?
Yeah, I'm going to go back on what I was thinking last week. I think Jimmy was surprised he didn't play. I thought he was going to play himself, so I would imagine he thinks he'll play this week. And I think he has a lot more time now to kind of get past that last hurdle on the concussion protocol. So you know, you mentioned he is practicing, which is a very positive sign. There's an extra day. Now the game is Monday. National TV, I'm sure female viewers want to see his pretty face on TV, so that's probably a factor also. But I don't know what that means.
That's what the doctors judging exactly. Like. We gotta make the viewers happy.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, who knows? So what do I know? But I think he'll play. But obviously, I think Aiden O'Connell showed enough where they have confidence that he could actually, you know, not be too bad if he is the option.
Yeah, I mean, specific word in McDaniels used yesterday was, you know, he's in the final stages, which I guess, you know, we could say he was last week as well. When he came back and practiced on Thursday and Friday as a limited participant, he was limited again on Wednesday. And so it seems like he has to make that transition to being the full before they actually give him the green light to go. Like what the actual final step for him is, like, we don't really know that yet. But, you know, I'd be pretty surprised if he doesn't go, especially like Vic said, would it be an extra day and being on Monday? And kind of the stakes of this game, like I'm sure he's pushing pretty hard to play. Obviously, it's not really up to him or even the team. It's, you know, the doctor, you know, as we saw with the Seahawks and Jamal Adams, sometimes those doctors don't exactly do what the player wants in these situations. So got to wait and see, you know, what the final determination comes down to.
Yeah, it seems like the league has taken concussion protocol even a little bit more seriously than they have in the past. Usually when a player is out for, I mean, this season, it seems rare that the next game they actually play in. And it seems like every time a player does get pulled for a concussion check, they end up going out now. So that's good to see. If you guys were to put a percentage on it, what percentage you guys think Garoppolo is playing?
75. I'll go 75.
93.
You got to be more specific. Von Miller said there's a 94.5% chance that he's going to play on Sunday. We got to get the percentage points in
there. Wow. My bad. 93.2.
There we go. Yeah, I mean, but I do agree. We probably should do a study on that. It does seem like that's kind of why Ted and I think last week were both, or with maybe Deshaun and I, they both thought that he wasn't going to play because it just seems like If you enter the concussion protocol, it's almost a guarantee that you miss that next game, and which is probably the responsible thing to do, even if Garoppolo wasn't happy about it. But obviously, the big storyline about this game is Devontae Adams facing his former team, and it would probably be a little bit more dramatic if this game was back in Lambeau. You know, whenever that time comes that Devontae does play a game back there, that'll certainly bring about some emotions. But you know, Matt Schneidman, our Packers beat writer, who obviously was a former Raiders writer for the Bay Area News Group here, he's in town early and talked to Devontae, asked him some questions at the podium, and Devontae basically acknowledged that had the Packers come with a better initial offer than the lowball offer that they gave him, that he would have stayed in Green Bay. He wouldn't have demanded that trade that he demanded last year that brought him to Las Vegas, which probably not surprising, but certainly was interesting to hear him talk about it. What's your sense of how Devontae is going to approach this game? I know he, you know, there's not a whole lot of players that he played with on the other side, but it is a coaching staff. And like he said on Thursday, seeing that green and gold out there on the other side, it's the only team that he's never played against in the NFL.
I think it'd be more of a fun experience for him and probably more like, you know, quote unquote important if the Raiders are doing well. I think the Raiders have had so many issues this year that he's become kind of the face of the franchise after games. Every game he's talking about his frustration and why he can't score and, you know, urgency and not having 11 guys on the same page on certain plays. So I think he's clearly really frustrated. I think that has to be probably his focus rather than, you know, playing against his old team. I think he has to get this thing figured out and get some points on the board because, like we mentioned, if not, it's going to be a long season. So I think I'm sure he'll enjoy. I think he and Matt LaFleur had a good relationship. I'm sure he'll enjoy going against him and some of the other guys he was there with. But for me, I think it's not really that big a deal this week because the Raiders are struggling and because he is the guy. You know, Josh Jacobs on offense, they got to get this thing turned around and kind of lead the way. So I think that's probably his primary focus. And he can't really enjoy the nostalgia too much because of what's going on.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of extra juice to, I mean, obviously he wants to win anyway, but especially against, you know, his first time playing against his former team. You know, even if he does have good relationships with them, I think just he's a competitive guy and naturally like those kind of situations bring that out of you a little bit more. You know, I know it's not in Green Bay, but we'll see what this crowd is looking like. I mean, Packers fans travel pretty well. Vegas is notorious for having pretty strong road crowds. It's a primetime game, so it might be a good amount of Packers fans in there, you know, to make it feel like it's, you know, him going back to his old place a little bit. But yeah, I mean, obviously the primary concern for the Raiders isn't really a revenge game or anything of that nature. It's, you know, not falling into a 1-4 hole, which I think we all would probably agree would send them on the path of no return this season.
I think there's a little bit of that revenge factor for Devontae Adams. They, you know, it was a struggle for him to try to get paid over there, and obviously he didn't end up getting the contract he wanted because he's a Raider now. But I think the crowd is going to be a factor. I mean, do you guys notice a lot of Packers jerseys walking around Vegas, Vic or Tashaun? Because I mean, for the Raiders to have to go to a silent count at home is obviously a big factor in these games. That's, I mean, you know, playing at home, part of the home field advantage is the other team has to go to a silent count. But when you're on a silent count, that just is a big disadvantage you're not supposed to have playing at home.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been in on the strip streets or anything like that, so I don't know. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of them there. I mean,
probably too early. They'll come in over the weekend.
Yeah, I don't know who's spending a full week in Vegas or anything like that. But I mean, the Steelers crowd was pretty deep, you know, and the Packers traveled in similar ways. So I would expect it to be the same. It's really, teams aside, like, that's just how Vegas is now. I mean, you know, you got, as a Raiders fan, you have, you know, 8 or 9 games a year that you can try to come see the Raiders play at Allegiant Stadium. But these opposing teams, they have one time a year. And so they're going to be more inclined to spend money on those tickets and, you know, pay triple the value on Ticketmaster or whatever it is. And so this is one of the things. I mean, the money is all the same, I guess, for Mark Davis and the team, but it definitely impacts them on game days.
Yeah, if you're a Raider fan, people say, hey, don't sell tickets to the opposing team. That sounds nice, but, I mean, these prices are pretty high. You're going to get a lot of money for it, so it's hard to, like, take the high ground and say, no, I have to stay loyal and I can't sell my tickets to the Packers fans because, you know, money is money. So I think there will be probably, my guess is two-thirds. Two-thirds of the crowd Monday will be Packers fans.
Oh, wow.
So, two-thirds. Yeah. So I think it's a Monday night game. Like you mentioned, people come out here for the big weekend, so that's my guess. And I think Raider fans, obviously, right now, we see it in the social media and the comments, very frustrated. And definitely, they're not optimistic, I would say, about things turning around. So I can't imagine they would hold on to tickets too tightly if they have a chance to sell them on Monday for a huge profit.
And you got to remember, the way the stadium was built, you know, moving into a new city, you know, a lot of ticket brokers bought these seats, or a lot of people that just, like, I'm not a Raiders fan, but hey, new stadium coming in, I'm going to be able to make money selling these tickets. So it's not even just as simple as telling Raider fans not to sell, because Raider fans might want to hold on to their seats. But if 25% of the tickets are held by brokers and that type, those people are just going to sell. But Vic, you know, we saw the scene in L.A. last week, and in front of Mark Davis's little kind of suite that was outdoors, and I'm blaming you for that because you did kind of you gave people the blueprint to it if they want to get the Raiders to move on, get Mark Davis to move on from Mark Davis from Josh McDaniel was to let Mark Davis hear about it, and they I think they took your word for it and they went up to his suite and let him hear about it.
Wow, that hurts, man. Well, I believe, I'm trying to think back to what I actually said. I think I was talking about home games. I guess the L.A. is kind of a home game.
It is a home game.
It's supposed to be a safe zone for Mark Davis. L.A. is supposed to be like, you know, kind of relaxed. And I'm not sure why he was outside. He was sitting outside in his little VIP booth. I would stay inside, but where he's not accessible. But, yeah, that one fan, like, it was just one fan? I think it was just one
guy. There was a couple different videos.
There was a little group.
As a group? All right. I mean, they may have been a little overzealous. They may have been a little aggressive. I mean,
Smarten up, Vic. Smarten up.
Smarten up. Yeah, you got to smarten up. You got to be a little better with your chance. I was trying to figure out what that meant, like, smarten up. Is he trying to say, like, see the big picture? Or, like, you're not, you know, give him time? Or, like,
you know, the patience factor? You know?
But the more I think about it, knowing Mark, I think he's just like, hey, man, if you're going to come at me, you got to do better than that. I mean, smarten up and use, you know, for McDaniel, I mean, you got to be a little more... more poetic, you know. But yeah, I guess I gave him the blueprint. I apologize to Mark Davis if that's true. But
are Raider fans going to show up at the WNBA finals to heckle him now?
No, that's a sanctuary. You can't go there. That's the one good thing they have going. So you know, I mean, like I said, fans are frustrated. They need me to egg them on. They've been frustrated for with the new regime since I got here, I think. So I mean, there was a lot of high hopes last offseason with Devontae coming in and the whole Derek Carr reunion and the offense is going to be great and all the things that Josh and Dave said about Derek and the offense and didn't happen. So I think they're clearly frustrated. I think they would have probably, I'm guessing, yelled at Mark, even if I hadn't suggested that was possibly a way to go. But, hey, man, it's a long season. We'll see what happens after they win on Monday.
Ooh, well, that's a tease of the prediction. We'll get to that in a minute, but I do want to talk about, Vic, you wrote about the rookie class, and you prefaced the story, I think you said five times, including in all caps, it's early. But let's pull up the numbers that the rookie class has combined for statistically.
That's like when someone says, you know, no offense intended, and then he's ripping the shreds. Like, yeah, you know, but it's basically that's what I was doing. It's kind of like, you know, it's a device.
It's zero sacks, 16 solo tackles, one catch for 2 yards, 37 yards rushing, and one touchdown. Obviously, that quarterback sneak from our guy Aiden O'Connell. That's what this rookie class is.
Hey, man, they're going to take away my man O'Connell's yards? Like, what's up with his passing?
We got his yard. Like? Well, yeah, okay. Well, we could have thrown the passing yards in there, but we got his rushing yards in there. His 3 yards rushing.
Oh man,
I could have mentioned that. I thought I was being nice. I had mentioned that. Only one pressure. Terry Wilson's got only one pressure this season so far, which is not very good. So, again, though, I think the Raiders would say it's a process, you know, it's a learning curve. I mean, Terry obviously came off a foot surgery and he missed most of camp. So those are valid excuses. That's why it is early. But you'd like to see some more usage, especially like, you know, Michael Mayer in the red zone. They can't score in the red zone. Why not throw it to the guy you picked in the second round? You'd like to see... you know, some more dynamic flashes from Tyree Wilson and even Byron Young. Byron Young's a pretty high pick for a guy. You know, he should have a role if you pick him, you know, when they picked him. He's kind of going the other direction. So we'll see what Nesta is a late round guy who played last week for the first time. Maybe he's the guy who can give him a spark. But clearly, we all heard the mandate before this year was, okay, it's not about wins and losses necessarily. We're going to try and win, but we're taking a long view, blah, 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 blah. The main thing is we're going to focus on the young guy, the draft picks, you know. Mack and Gruden, they stunk at this. We're going to do well. We're going to get good draft picks. We're going to play, have impact. And that has not been the case through four games.
Is there any chance that they accidentally drafted the wrong Byron Young? Because the other Byron Young that went to the Rams like nine picks later is doing pretty good. Did they just submit the wrong name?
I would say yes, but he's the outside guy, isn't he? So I'm not sure after picking Tyree, he can go outside again that early in the draft. But maybe. Who knows with the Raiders? You never know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, amongst the rookie class, really the only one that you could say has been impressive so far is Ja'Korian Bennett. Like, I think, you know, he's had some bad moments where he, you know, has defensive pass interference plays and gives up some catches. But I think he's been solid, you know, as a starting cornerback, and he was a day one starter for them. And his snaps went down last week, but that seemed to be more injury related. You know, he was limited going into the game, and then He's been listed with a couple injuries this week, and so I don't think it was performance based. But outside of him, obviously that's nice if you get a starting cornerback out of a fourth round pick. But the rest of it, you're getting pretty much nothing right now, you know, except for O'Connell's one start. And so, you know, not every rookie is going to be an instant hit. Maybe these guys come on strong at the end of the season or going into year two, but definitely not a promising start when you combine it with, you know, the lack of production that they got from last year's draft class. I mean, you know, Dylan Parham was really the only guy that emerged as a major contributor amongst that class. I know it was smaller because they made the Davante Adams trade, but you still had some capital to work with. And so overall, you know, the returns from their draft picks just, you know, haven't been what you would hope for them to be, you know, coming off of a run of some pretty terrible draft in the last few years.
I thought this was going to be a possibility, and we talked about this on the pod, that right after the draft, that this draft was kind of for next year. I mean, you know, it's just not a lot of instant contributors in this draft. I mean, Tyree was a project. Michael Mayer is a tight end where he needs to be a good blocker to be effective, and usually those type of tight ends take a year to develop in the league. Jacorian Bennett has been a nice surprise. I think he's playing really good for a rookie. I know he gave up that big catch at the end, but I really thought he had good coverage and there was a little bit of a push off there. You know, we see Trey Tucker's speed translate. I mean, he hasn't produced yet, but I mean, teams, you know, his speed translates. You know, I think he's going to be a contributor for this team at some point this season. But, you know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be, you know, he's going to get 800 yards and be that strong of a contributor just yet. So all these picks are.
I just want a catch. I just want one catch. That's all I want. I want one catch.
Well, shit, he only got one target. I mean, shit, it's hard for him to get it.
I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming, obviously, the usage. I just think that to have the trouble they've had offensively and not have him get some targets or not have Michael Mayer get some targets, I think is pretty bizarre.
I think Mayer will get 3 catches this next game. I think they'll wow. I think they'll try to get him the ball. I mean, I don't know how many yards. It might be 3 catches for 10 yards, but I think he'll get 3 catches this game.
All right, well, let's make some predictions. Vic already has them with a big Monday night win. You want to go first, buddy?
Actually, I lied. I picked them in. I picked the Packers to win on my picks, so I was trying to get carried away with my false enthusiasm.
Smarten up.
That's why I'm making the real pick. I'm smartening up. I just think there's bad matchups in this game. I think that, again, I said the Raiders' defense is not as bad as I thought they were going to be. But this game does not bode well for them. I think Aaron Jones is a really bad matchup. I think the Raiders linebackers are not very good. And Devon Diablo's fine, but I think Spillane's been kind of a bust so far. I think, plus the defensive tackles you mentioned not been good. So even A.J. Dillon can get going in that running game. So I think the running backs are a huge problem. I think Christian Watson is probably finally healthy. He's dangerous deep. And I think Jordan Love can get around and can escape. If there is pressure, he can escape it and make a play with his feet. So all those things, I think, do not bode well for the Raiders' defense. I think we've mentioned the Raiders' offense will have a hard time keeping up. So I do think it'll be a close game, but I think the Packers are going to win by like 27-24.
Yeah, I think they're going to lose again. I think the offense scores 20 points for the first time, but they'll lose 27-20 to the Packers. I just think while the Packers' defense has had some holes in it, particularly against the run, like we've seen with the Raiders so far this season, that hasn't seemed to matter if they go against a bad run defense or not. Like, they haven't been able to find success, and the Packers' pass defense is pretty good. And so I think it'll be, the offense will eventually get to 20, but I don't think it'll be a fast start or anything of that nature. And, you know, the Raiders' defense is what it is. I mean, the Packers' offense hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire, but they do have a good rushing attack when healthy. And Jordan Love seems like he's at least a competent starter in the league. And Matt LaFleur is obviously a great play caller as well. So I think they lose this one and fall to 1-4. And then we get a lot more of those chances that Mark Davis was getting.
I think the one big weakness on this Packers defense is their run defense, 21st in defensive run success. But the problem is that the Raiders can't run the ball and they can't take advantage of that weakness. The Packers coming off a week where their head coach LaFleur was talking about, like, they have to do something different as far as their run defense. So they might make some adjustments anyways this week. That's going to make it tougher for the run game to get going. Pass defense, they're pretty good. They're 12th in defensive EPA per drop back. And I think they're going to make it a major point not to get Davante Adams going because of that, you know, quote unquote revenge factor. I just don't see the Raiders doing much offensively. And on the defensive side of the ball, Jordan Love has been really bad in the first two halves of the last two games. But then, you know, he's missed wide open guys. And then in the second half, he starts hitting all the hard passes. So to me, he seems like a young quarterback that really needs to get hit to get kind of into the game. So I think they might come off to a slow start, but I think they'll get things going in the second half, especially in a passing game. So I think Packers are going to take this 27-20.
Packers have been a little bit of that Jekyll and Hyde team where you've seen them, you know, they came out strong in the opener and then they've had, you know, kind of some weird games, obviously, last week with the Lions. I think the Raiders are not good, but I said early in the season that I think they're going to be a little bit up and down.
Let's go. Flip it.
The big game for the Carlson brothers. We're going to get three field goals for Daniel Carlson, two for Anders Carlson. Man. Daniel Carlson with the game-winning field goal, 23-20. The Raiders top 20 points for the first time, and it's three field goals for Daniel Carlson and two touchdowns for Devontae Adams and a 23-20 win.
Oh, wow.
That was well done.
Back on track.
I like that.
All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap up this week's episode of State of the Nation. We'll be back next week, and we'll see how the Raiders fare against the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football.
Later.
All right, guys. Smarten up. Country roads take me home to the place I belong.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.